The Celtics, looking more interesting by the day, head out on a tough road trip. This might be the first big challenge for this still-developing team. Then, we're going to meet at the intersection of Boston and celebrity to see who's there. Maybe Tom and Giselle on their way to Newberry Street? It's Thursday, November 2nd. I'm Joe Sullivan, in for Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Joe Sullivan, sports editor of the Globe. I'm part Marcus Smart, part Craig Kimbrell, and I mean the good Craig Kimbrell, not the one to pitch in the Game 4 of the ALDS. We begin today talking about the Boston Celtics. They'll be in Oklahoma City Friday night with Carmelo and Paul George and Russell Westbrook. Then they have a Sunday night game in Orlando and a Monday game in Atlanta. This won't be easy. Joining me now via Skype is Chad Finn, the Globe's media columnist. And really, you fancy yourself a really good basketball player and expert, don't you, Chad?
No, I don't. No, I don't fancy myself. I am.
Did you stick long enough to see Abdel Nader play in the fourth quarter?
I'm more about Yabusele than Nader. I saw a lot of him up here in Maine playing for the Red Claws last year. So I got my scouting report on him. So I didn't necessarily stay through the whole game. That was determined pretty quickly. But I did check back in to see who was getting the garbage time minutes.
So as you can tell by Chad said Maine, he lives in Maine. So he goes to – you've been to Red Claws games, Chad?
Sure, yeah. Why wouldn't I? It's basketball. Well,
all right, that makes you qualified enough to speak anything about the Celtics when you've been to a Red Claws game. But this road trip, looking ahead, I mean, starting with Oklahoma City, this is going to be the first challenge for this team that's now won six in a row after leaving their first two. How are you looking at this road trip?
Yeah, I mean, their first challenge is really figuring out how things were going to be reshuffled after Hayward got hurt. The way Kyrie Irving is playing, you can make the argument that Kyrie Irving is the most talented player on this basketball team, even if Hayward were healthy and the best basketball player. But I think they were going to ask more out of Hayward. A lot of the offense was going to run through him. They were going to utilize his playmaking abilities, probably even a little bit more than the Utah Jazz did when he was an all-star caliber player there. That team played slow. The Celtics play fast. So with losing that guy, Joe, they kind of had to fill in a lot of different gaps. And to me, it's pretty amazing they've, after dropping those two games and kind of having to figure out, okay, where do we go from here two games into the season, that they've won six in a row and that things look as fluid as they do. It is a tough road trip coming up that is a star-studded Oklahoma City team for sure, and it's interesting to see how all of this is going to mesh with Carmelo and Paul George and Russell Westbrook, who I don't think is going to appreciate you giving him third billing in that list.
Well, it was more like he was batting cleanup, the way I was saying it. Third. He would bat third as the best hitter in the lineup.
He's the leadoff hitter.
What is he so angry about, Chad? Do we know?
Is it angry or is it determined to prove everybody wrong that has ever doubted him for a nanosecond? I mean, yeah, you'd think he'd be over it after last year where he went out and had that MVP season, in his first year without Kevin Durant and averaged a triple-double. But apparently he's still got that motivation. And I guess that's one of the things that must make him such a great player is that every little slight is something he uses to fuel his continued rise to being one of the great players of his era.
Yeah, that's how he gets his energy, from anger. So here's something I wanted to talk about. Kyrie Irving averaging over two steals a game.
The perception that he struggled without LeBron in Cleveland is something he's trying to disprove here with the Celtics in that real focused, he's the man kind of role that he has. And he's manifesting that by putting in more of a defensive effort than he ever has. Maybe Stevens has gotten through to him. He probably has, but I think a big part of it is Kyrie just wants to show people that he can do it.
Look, I'm going to say it. I am the biggest fan of Brad Stevens there could be. I just think he's tremendous. He has turned Kyrie Irving into a really good defensive player. So now, the way the game starts, Kyrie has to cover Westbrook, doesn't he?
Were you a Brad Stevens guy coming into the league? Did you think it was going to work to the level that it has with him coming from Butler?
You know, I wasn't, Chad, because college guys coming in the NBA does not work out well usually. We've seen many examples of how poorly it ends up. I mean, Rick Pitino, John Calipari stick out the most. He's going to be the exception to the rule. He's just sensational.
Well, it's a tribute to how good he is as a coach, and you hear it from pretty much everywhere now. I mean, Greg Popovich was talking about it before the game of the Spurs about how well-respected Stevens is among his peers and how great he is and is going to be.
he is a special person, and that's on and off the court. He's very intelligent, and along, you know, intelligence is fine, but if it doesn't come along with incisiveness and judgment and an emotional maturity, it doesn't do you much good. And he's got all those things, and that's large. Not that many people have that. And it shows the way he handles people, the way he coaches. He's going to be a great one before it's all over with, and he's already a hell of a coach.
And I think a lot of the success that the Celtics have is directly due to him, but I don't know. I think Kyrie leading league in steals at this point is a Kyrie thing.
Yeah, he talks about defense a lot in the post-game press conferences, too. That's where it starts, he says.
Our defensive identity is down there. We got to get stops, timely stops. Every possession matters. We understand that offensively we're not going to be our best every single night, but defensively we can control our attitude and effort and cover one another.
To me, that's Stevens getting through to him, that he knows what the philosophy is. They're the best defensive team in the NBA through the early going here. But look, a road trip like this can change things. When you play three games in four nights against tough competition, Oklahoma City, I would expect them to lose that game. The key game to the success of the road trip, I think, Chad, is that second one, an improved Orlando team. This is one they have to get. You know, the Hawks, they're in rebuilding mode. That should be a victory. But how do you see this road trip? What should the goal be?
I think they can beat anybody. I really do. It's based mostly not only in the way Irving is playing, the way Al Horford is playing, who, you know, he takes a lot of criticism around here. Maybe a little bit of it is just, but this is a guy who shot over 50% from three in the playoffs last year, who is the fulcrum of their defense, who, when their offense stagnates, they run it through him. He gets the ball at the high post. They run all the screeners off of that, and that's how they sort of stabilize things. He's been a terrific player here, and he's been really, really good, especially lately. They've got all these things clicking at once. And if they can do that, I think they can go into Oklahoma City and win. This game means more to Orlando than it does to the Celtics. This is a team that was supposed to be mediocre at best this year, but they're getting kind of some things you wonder if they're sustainable. Aaron Gordon is knocking down three-pointers all over the court. This is a guy who, when he came into the league, was a dunker and an incredible athlete, and was supposed to be a defensive menace, but nobody ever thought he was going to be able to shoot. So you wonder if this is something that's going to be sustainable with him. If it is, he's an all-star caliber player, but you know, less than 10% of the way into the schedule here. I want to see Aaron Gordon do that a lot longer. And Atlanta, I mean, that's just a team that is starting over. You know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they were a terrific basketball team when Horford was there and Paul Millsap and Kyle Korver was knocking down three-pointers all over the place. They knocked the Celtics out of the playoffs that season, and it was a really fun team to watch. You respected the way they played, but they're nothing like that now. They're starting over, and that really, even if the Celtics are a little bit tired from the earlier games on the trip, that's one they should win with, you know, 80% of their energy and effort. They should still come out of there with a victory.
You know, when you started talking, Chad, I wasn't sure which way you were going to go. You are really on board with the Celtics team. After what you just told me, I think they're going to win all three games. Is that right?
Are you saying they're going 80-2? I'm not going that far. But no, I think they have a chance every night they take the court, though. I mean, so much of it with them depends on the shooting of the younger guys. Marcus Smart is still pretty erratic, but does a lot of things to help you win, even if his shot isn't falling. But when you have nights like Jaylen Brown had last night, where he had 22 points, I think, on eight shots, that you don't get more efficient than that. If him and Jason Tatum continue to play the way that they have, and they probably won't, you'll hit a rookie wall, especially Tatum, who's only 19 years old and has no idea what an 82-game schedule feels like. They'll take their lumps, but right now they're playing at an extremely high level, and it's really encouraging. And when these guys are playing like that, I think they have a chance every time they take the court, no matter who they're playing. And given that 3 weeks ago we were wondering where they were headed when Gordon Hayward went down with that injury, it's pretty remarkable to see them playing the way they are right now.
This is, I don't know how to feel, except that there's nothing but optimism for the Celtics, Chad. Gee, this is crazy. What are we doing being optimistic?
Well, you know, they're pretty fun to watch, and I think it goes back to that guy from Butler. He's as good as anybody we've seen in a long time, and taking a piece and getting the most out of that particular guy's ability. One of the things you really admire about the Celtics and Stevens when you watch them for a prolonged amount of time, and not just a couple weeks, but over a couple seasons, is how he takes a player with an odd set of skills and maxes out his ability. We saw it with Isaiah Thomas, who they built their offense around a 5'9" point guard who didn't pass that well, but had an incredible knack for scoring. He's gotten great seasons out of guys like Evan Turner. He turned Jordan Crawford into a useful NBA player. It's fun to watch him take various pieces, and they don't look like they're going to add up to much of a puzzle, but they end up adding up to a pretty good basketball team in the end. And now he's got probably more talent than he's had at any point since he's been here, even without Hayward. So it's a really encouraging time to be following the Celtics. It's a fun team to watch. It's a smart team. And I think you have to feel good about their chances, no matter who they're playing.
There you have it. It's just not in Bill we trust anymore. It's in Brad we trust, too. Chad, thanks very much for joining us to talking about the Celtics.
You bet, Joe. Good talking to you.
Coming up in Boston, we treat athletes like celebrities. The Globe's names columnist, Mark Shanahan, dishes on his favorite stories about athletes off the field. That's next. Welcome back. A quick note. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. Today, I want to talk about celebrity and celebrity in Boston. And sports figures most often are the celebrities in Boston. I'm sitting here with a celebrity expert, Mark Shanahan, who writes the names column for the Globe, along with Meredith Goldstein. Mark, can I call you a gossip columnist?
Good morning, Joe. Yes, you can do that.
And are you not insulted if I call you one?
No, and really what passes for gossip at the Globe is a little bit different than the New York Post, but sure.
Oh, you're trying to say you're on a different level?
Well, I'm just saying that we have certain standards of attribution and such that perhaps don't apply to some of the New York tabloids.
Oh, but not subject matter?
Maybe a little bit.
One thing we're not going to talk about, Mark, is your athletic experience. I know you fancy yourself an athlete, but we're not going to talk about your tennis career today, okay?
Fine.
We're going to talk about celebrity. And so who are the celebrities that attract the most readers? Who are you trying to write about?
Well, I think you could probably guess. You know, Tom Brady on the football field, Julian Edelman, and then, you know, the hockey team over time has had its, you know, occasional Tyler Seguin, Brad Marchand.
You miss Tyler Seguin, don't you?
I do miss Tyler Seguin.
And Brad Marchand's kind of calmed down.
The GM does not miss Tyler Seguin.
Tyler Seguin, of course, was, when he played for the Bruins, was someone who's known to love the nightlife.
I would say also that the baseball team, of course, David Ortiz, and in his heyday, Jonathan Papelbon made some good copy.
Another guy we miss.
And then the basketball team, I will say that over time, they have kept a relatively low profile, although that may change with Kyrie Irving. He did have a reputation in Cleveland for going out, and I'm hopeful, for purely selfish reasons, that that's the case here.
And look, in the sports department, we have games we go to. We have practices to go to get our stories. How do you get your stories?
Well, you have to go out. It's true. You go to premieres. You go to parties. You go out to eat.
Obviously, you've told us you've met a lot of celebrities and athletes who aren't even from Boston. You once told me about an interaction you had with Anna Kournikova, the tennis player.
Correct. So Anna Kournikova, for those of you who don't recall, and I don't know who those of you might be, but she was a Russian tennis player in the 90s. She wasn't very good. In fact, she never did win a singles title, despite the fact that she was on the cover of every Lad mag and Sports Illustrated. She came through town at one point to promote some nonprofit she was involved in, and the publicist called me and said, would you like 15 minutes alone with Anna Kournikova? And I thought, well, 15 minutes with Anna Kournikova beats a whole year with Ernie Bach Jr. I said, yeah. And so the time and place was arranged, and it was about 100 degrees that day, and I had worn a coat and a tie because I'm a professional. She and I began to speak, and I was dutifully taking notes while she spoke to me. And while we were talking, I could feel an enormous bead of sweat roll down the tip of my nose, and I thought to myself, please don't do this. And I was taking notes, and sure enough, it just released, and it was as if it was in slow motion, and it just fell and fell and fell, and then splash, right onto my notebook. And I looked up at Anna Kournikova, and she said, "It's hot today." So anyway, yeah, that was pretty embarrassing.
Well, it's nice to know she's sweet about it.
She is sweet about it. She was sweet about it.
So I want to talk about my interaction with you. When usually we've been together at Super Bowls. And that's one of the benefits of the Patriots winning. You get to go to Super Bowls, to all the tremendous parties. For people who don't know, the days the nights before the Super Bowl is played, there's all sorts of big parties.
Correct.
And Mark gets to go to all of them. But here, can I ask you this? How come you never took me to any of these parties? You ditched me every night during Super Bowl week.
You're not incorrect. I did ditch you, but it was oftentimes I'm not a plus one. These are coveted tickets, and I'm lucky to get one. So that's, it's nothing personal.
In Jacksonville, before Tom Brady became as big as he is now, you once told me a tale about him and Giselle
this precedes Giselle.
Precedes Giselle. Yeah, this is still dating Bridget Moynihan?
Bridget Moynihan, right. So the Patriots have a very good post-game party at the Super Bowl. At this particular party, it was totally off the hook, and there was a lot of pot being smoked, and there was a lot of extremely expensive champagne being consumed. So at some point, Snoop Dogg comes out. He's wearing
that's where the pot came from.
Correct. He was just in a cloud of smoke on stage. And at some point during the evening, he introduced a song and he said, "What's my favorite drink?" And I'm not a giant Snoop Dogg fan, so I really didn't know what Snoop's favorite drink was. But Tom Brady and Bridget Moynihan were standing next to me, and Tom put his hands in the air and said, "Gin and juice." And I was like, good for you, Tom. And then Snoop Dogg said again, "What's my favorite drink?" Tom Brady put his hands in the air and screamed, "Gin and juice." Anyway, this went on for about four or five times. And all I could think of was like, "Shut up, Tom Brady." And he was just so annoying.
Well, see, there's an example. I might have been a better friend at this party than Tom Brady if you hadn't ditched me as
Correct.
Usual that night.
That's true. How many Super Bowls have you won?
Mark, it's been great having you here on Season Ticket, bringing us behind the scenes to the party scene at the Super Bowl. And this year in Minnesota, let's talk about the parties and make some plans together. Can we do that?
Yeah, it's a deal.
All right. That's much better. Finally, we couldn't let the show end without giving a tip of the hat to a great World Series.
Success. Here's a ground ball right side, could do it. The Houston Astros are world champions for the first time in franchise history.
That, of course, was Joe Buck of Fox Sports calling the final out of Game 7 of the great series between the Houston Astros and the Los Angeles Dodgers. Houston won the game 5-1. And this is a team that's been around since 1962, and this is their first championship. Certainly, Houston has needed something to cheer about since the hurricane devastated the city. And as the Red Sox did in 2013, they showed the power of sports to bring together a city after tragedy. As for the Dodgers, they still have plenty of young players, a huge payroll, and I suspect we haven't seen the last of them. They'll be back in the World Series soon. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you like this, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Joe Sullivan, in for Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.